up, y'all, and welcome back to Found Bites, a game review series. My name is Brian, and I'll be your host. If you don't know about us, we're all about testing out and finding small, high-quality video games. This is a podcast that aims to respect your time and money as a gamer and a consumer by sifting through storefronts and sales to find those gems that may be worth your precious resources. If you're interested in reaching out or helping out, check out the links in the description of each episode to access our email, Twitter, website, and YouTube channel. But enough about the show, let's get into our next game. Nova 111 is the game for this week's episode. Nova 111 is a turn-based action strategy game. Yes, that's right, turn-based action. It's definitely similar to some games, some parts of some games. A lot of Crypt of the Necrodancer in there with sort of like the rhythm-based movement. Crossed with games like Rezogun, as well as games like Transistor that kind of do this turn-based and real-time at the same time. The game was originally released in August of 2015, so it's been a while, and it was out on PC, Mac, PS4, and Xbox One, and then in September of that year, 2015, it came to PS3, Wii U, as well as Vita, and the game is cross-buy on Vita and PS4, just so we know. And then finally, in January of 2022, it came to Switch, so about 7 years, it finally came to Switch, and rightfully so. The game was developed by Funktronic Labs, which is a small team out in California, and they've made a bunch of small games. If you check out on their website, I think they're now doing a lot of VR games. And this studio was made by some former Q Games employees, a bunch of people that did the Pixel Junk games. The game was published by Curve Games, which is a publisher out of London, and we've talked about them before. They publish games like Hue, as well as games like The Swapper and Serial Cleaner that we've talked about before. The Switch port was published by No Gravity Games, and this is an indie publisher that specializes in console ports of games that we've seen before, like Creepy Tale, as well as a game called Alder's Blood they've published on console, which is a game that I've had my eye on for a while and I hope to get back to. The game has had a physical release. In April of 2017, Limited Run did a release on PS4 and Vita. It was essentially a standard edition, just the game in the box. They also did a CD OST, and they kind of bundled that, so there was a standard and then a standard with the soundtrack bundle. The game released with an MSRP of $9.99 on console. On Steam, I'm seeing it for an MSRP of $4.99, so that's a big difference, half price. I'm not sure if it started at $4.99, but that's definitely the max that I've seen it at. Interesting difference between Steam and console there. And those limited run physical editions for just the standard edition, the game in the box, that was released for $24.99, and then the OST CD bundle was released for $39.99. Runtime of the game, if you're just kind of running straight through, just trying to beat the levels, it should take you about 5 to 6 hours, but there's definitely a lot of extras, a lot of exploration, secret areas, collectibles to get. It might take you over 10, maybe closer to 15 if you're really trying to get everything. And the game does not have a platinum trophy for our PlayStation listeners. That was sort of a bummer that I found that out. It definitely kept me from trying to get everything in this game. So me, I bought this for 99 cents on PS4, and I got the cross-buy on Vita, so I've been playing it on Vita, and I've put in about 3 to 4 hours. There's 3 areas, and I'm almost on the second one. But really the big draw for me, I found out about this on Twitter. There are a couple different people that post anytime there's a PlayStation sale, which of the games are cross-buy on Vita. So I've been looking for something cross-buy on Vita to play on my Vita, and this is something that popped up. And so I kind of gave it a whirl, bought it, and just dove in. We'll be right back. talk gameplay for Nova 111. So like we said, this is a turn-based action kind of synergy going on here. It is unique, although we have seen some games try similar things. But let's get into some of the basics here. So let's start with just the view. So you're going to be looking at this game. I don't know if it's quite top-down or like a cross-sectional, but you're looking at it almost like it's a chessboard or something like that. But you are seeing objects face from the side, almost like a fish tank. So I would say it's more cross-sectional. The layout is essentially like a grid with different spaces. And so anything can occupy these spaces, whether it's you, whether it's enemies, whether it's the environment. But it's not going to be like a perfect grid or like a perfect square, like a chessboard. It's going to be an environment that might have ridges or it might block you from certain paths. So it is kind of limited in the scope that you're able to move in. But in terms of the movement, what's interesting is you're going to be moving one space at a time, and you can do that in any direction should there not be a wall there to block you. So you can move in any of the four cardinal directions from the space that your character is on. I have found that the D-pad is best for using to traverse, just so there's no confusion. The joystick can maybe get a little annoying, but the D-pad, it's very simple. You know whether you're going down, up, left, or right. Now, what's interesting is as you're moving, you're also potentially attacking. You're not going to be doing a special attack button just to attack things. Essentially, what you're going to be doing is if one of the adjacent spaces that you're trying to move to is occupied by something, whether it is the environment or whether it is an enemy, you're just going to move towards them and you're going to kind of bump into it. And that is the version of just generally attacking that space. Now, if there's an enemy there, you can do one hit of damage anytime you attack. If there are breakaway environmental things like rocks or something like that, or interacting with something like hitting a switch, or you can generally just bump the wall to make sure that there's nowhere else to go in that direction. But basically, you just keep moving and you're going to attack if a space is occupied. Now, progressing in this game, so we talked about the general layout in terms of the number of areas. There are three areas in the game, or acts in the game, and each of these areas is going to be made up of six zones. And as you beat a zone, you can kind of move forward, almost like an overworld, like Super Mario World, but it's just in a straight line. And when you're on that map of the different zones, you can go back and forth, so you can go back to past levels. Once you go into a zone, you're going to have to beat, I think, about three consecutive levels. I'm pretty sure all of them are the same in terms of how many. And when you're in that level, that's sort of the grid that you're looking at or the space that you have to traverse. And you're basically just trying to get to the exit whenever you're in a level. And so you have to traverse different obstacles and enemies and environmental things. But while you're in that level, there are some other things you can do. There are optional collectibles that you can partake in. And this is similar a lot to Resogun, because there's going to be a lot of like trying to rescue all of the characters in that level. And then when you beat the zone, it's going to give you like an arcade like grading. So it'll say how many of the survivors you found, how many of the secret areas, things like that, as well as it'll show you the different high scores that other people have gotten and how long it took you and how long it took other people. And then the last zone in an area, like I said, there's six zones. That last zone is going to be like a boss level where you're trying to move around, but also trying to kill a boss. Now, when you're traversing in a level, this is where it's interesting because, like we said, this is a turn-based game and your movement, even though you are pushing which way your character is going, your movement is going to be turn-based. Now, this is multifaceted here because what that means is anytime you move, there's going to be a counter that is ticking up how many turns it's taking you. So in that respect, it's kind of playing into the arcade feel because when you beat a level or beat a zone, it tells you how many turns it took you to do that. And so when you're looking at your arcade kind of grading or scoring or comparing yourself to high scores, it's like who can do it in the fewest amount of movements or turns. But where this is really interesting in the concept of turns is that anytime you move, any other object or environmental automation or enemy moves at the same pace that you do. So it's almost like every time you move a space, everything else is moving a turn or doing something in a turn, or kind of the world around you keeps going as well, but it does it at the same pace that you do. So this is where the comparison between Crypt of the Necrodancer is, because it's almost like everything is moving in this same rhythm. And so as everything is moving in the same rhythm, if you're not moving, you don't have to worry too much about anything else moving towards you or anything else progressing, because you can take the time to strategize what you're going to do on your turn. Now, it's very simple. It's not like, you know, you're in a turn-based battle or something like that where you're choosing menu options. It's just like, should I go here or here? And that seems very simple, but it's actually going to play quite a role in strategizing based on what other things are doing. So the main thing that you have to worry about is, whether it's enemies or the environment, doing something that could hurt you or could damage you. And everything is going to have sort of tells before something is going to happen. So an enemy is going to have tells when it's about to attack. So you have as much time as you need to move out of the way or to attack it back or potentially kill it. Or if the environment is going to do something, typically you have time to figure out, okay, I need to move or I need to get out of the way. Let me strategize which way I'm going to go, because that's going to take place, quote unquote, next turn. Now, there is some timey-wimey-ness here, because while a turn is going to all take place at the same time, when you do something, it is going to happen like slightly before. And what I mean is that if you're attacking a space that has an enemy or an environmental hazard or something like that, it's going to happen slightly before whatever that thing is doing happens. So for example, if you have an enemy that is going to attack you and it has one health left, if you attack it, it will die before it attacks you. But that also has consequences to other things. So for example, if there's an environmental hazard that is kind of moving at a certain pace, you don't want to walk into it. But if you know it's going to move one more space, you might think like, oh, I will just occupy the space that it is currently at as it moves to the next space. That is where, again, that same timey-wimey-ness of you kind of going first is going to now be a negative, because you're going to occupy that space with that hazard before it moves and you will take damage. So there's a little bit of kind of getting to know how the timing works. Even though everything moves at the same pace at one turn, there are like do's and don'ts for how to figure out like, okay, I can kill this because I'm going to kill it before it hits me, or I have to wait another turn for this thing to move to make sure the space I'm going on is clear currently. You also have a function of just waiting. So instead of moving, you can press on PlayStation, it's the X button, and you can stay on your space and everything else around you will progress one turn. So this is very beneficial and very strategy-based. If you get somewhere too early, you can wait an extra turn and then now it's like, okay, now I have the timing right, I'll slip in here and move on. The game also has like a sea distance, like a cloud over spaces that you can't see. So as you're progressing into new rooms or new areas, that cloud will start to dissipate and you'll see what's in that room, and then enemies will start to appear. The map is not something that you can move space over or see far away, and anywhere you haven't been is just going to be darkness. So you have to go to these places to see what the layout is. But you can't pan the map, like you can't pan the camera to see where you've been or where you can go. So it's kind of just like you only have access to your screen, and unless you can see an enemy, you're not going to see it move or move towards you really, unless it's in full view. So you're going to be seeing a lot of things and interacting with a lot of things. So let's talk about the interactions in level. So like I said, the environment is going to be a big play here. Obviously, you have the outside walls or like the barriers, like you can't go through or you can't move past there. And that's what's sort of guiding you towards the exit, like the only path or the main path. But there are other things in the environment, like you will find blocks that you can clear away and you have to attack them sometimes once, sometimes twice. Sometimes you'll see blocks that when you hit one of them, they kind of domino and hit all the other blocks and clear them away. You'll see switches that'll open doors or activate certain environments. Things that can be beneficial but also be hazardous. You'll see sort of these one-way chutes, and this is kind of a point of no return, like they're moving one way. So once you get out of the chute, it might move you one space, it might move you five spaces, but then you find that you can't go back to that area. So you want to be very patient as you're exploring so that you don't go one way and then you can't go back. And then you'll also see like similar things where it's like an ice sliding path where you can only go from back and forth to where the path begins. And then so you might see some kind of Zelda-like things going on there where it's like you need to stop at a certain point to go to a certain trajectory. And then you're going to have hazards. And some of these hazards are time. Some of them are proximity-based. They'll activate when you get close to them. Some of these hazards might be in a movement themselves, whether a loop or kind of a patrol path. Enemies are a very big thing going on here, and there's really good variation with the enemies. So a lot of them are just going to be melee based, like they're going to attack you when they're right in front of you or one space away from you. And again, you will see a tell visually that they're about to attack, but then you're going to see ones that have ranged attacks, like they can shoot multiple spaces. So if you're more than a space away, you might not be safe. And then some of them are going to have projectiles that are going to move in time. And so you can kind of space out where you are or how to get past them. And again, that weight function might come in handy. Some of them are going to move at different paces or different patterns. And some of them are going to do varying damage. So as you get further along, there are going to be enemies that do more damage. Some more advanced things, you're going to see enemies that do AoE attacks or do like a bull charge. Aggro distance is pretty consistent with you being seen or seeing them, as well as their attack style. So the ones that do like a bull charge, like they're going to see you from far away and they're going to start to attack from far away. Whereas the other ones, as they get closer to you, then they have to ramp up their attack. Some of them are going to take one hit to kill, especially early on, and then you're going to see ones that take multiple hits. So you're really going to have to strategize because some of them attack regularly or shoot projectiles regularly. So you might only be able to get one hit in before you have to move out of the way. And then so, of course, this is going to bring kind of unique kill procedures for some of these different enemies that you will learn how to do as you experience them. Now, for the environment and for enemies, there is going to be a strange intersection of turn-based and real-time, which we've talked about. So, for example, some of the hazards, you're going to go onto a space that is under like a falling rock or what looks like an icicle, and you're going to see it move. And you're moving in spaces in turn-based time, but once you activate this rock, it's going to fall in real time. So this is where the intersection of turn-based and real time is kind of going to turn everything on its head for you. Similar to some of the enemies, you might attack them and they might have a meter that goes down before they're going to do an AoE explosion, and you have to move in your turn-based movement, but you have to do it in real time. So you're going to see this intersection of enemies and environmental hazards coming at you with turn-based attacks and real-time attacks that you have to get out of the way of. So it's very interesting. You have to kind of manage your stress when this happens because you might freak out like, oh, I have to get away, but you don't want to fall into the trap of a turn-based attack or something like that that's happening in another space. So I really like this synergy here. It works really well. I think it's a unique combination, even though we've seen it before in games like Transistor. But I love that it keeps you on your toes where like you have to make turn-based decisions and you're going to see turn-based consequences, but also manage real-time consequences at the same time. And so once you see certain things for the first time, now you're getting a sense of like, okay, once I activate this, I have to be ready to do X, Y, or Z. So let me plan out the turn-based section. And then once the real-time section comes up, then I can just do what I know I can do to get out of the way of this. And as you're moving around in these levels, you're going to see kind of multiple paths at times, and this is going to encourage exploration as well as collection. And we've talked about the different things that you can collect, but you're going to see areas that might have more paths that you can go on. But in general, these levels are going to be linear because even if you have extra paths that you can go on, they're going to end up in dead ends because there's really only going to be one path to get to the home or the end of the level. Some of these extra paths are going to be secret, meaning they're kind of hidden behind the environment. If you're very patient visually, you can see kind of a tell for some of these hidden paths. But if you get onto some of the more advanced levels, these are going to be harder to find. So what you're going to be doing is testing different walls when you get close to the edge. Or if you see like a long single path that dead ends, you might think like, oh, there could be a secret area here. So you're going to constantly be bumping into walls to see like, oh, can I move behind this and then find a secret area? And as you're progressing on the main path, you might see some inaccessible areas that have like a power-up or a collectible there. And so it keeps that in mind as you're progressing through the main path. Like, oh, I found that inaccessible area over here. So maybe there's a secret area down here that would potentially lead to that inaccessible area. And like I said, you're collecting different things. One of the things you're going to be finding is a certain number of survivors that you can rescue, much like in Resogun. And there are a certain number of them per zone or per multiple levels. I think it's either 8 or 9. It depends on the zone. So that's going to amount to like maybe 2 or 3 per each level within a zone. Other things that you can find in some of these secret areas are going to be heart pieces. So much like Zelda, if you find 4 heart pieces, it's going to upgrade your max health. You might also find extra charges for your powers that you're going to get. They're going to be powers in this game that you get to allow you to traverse and to attack in different ways. So let's talk about your character. Your character is going to be the spaceship that's traveling on this grid. And so you are going to have a max health. And anytime you get hit by enemies, you're going to take damage in that max health. But as you're traversing through the level, you'll find single recovery items that you can just pick up when you get on the space. And that'll give you back health points if you're missing health points. But you're also going to find powers, like I said. And these are going to be, I think, mandatory. Like, you're going to receive these on the linear story path, and it's going to allow you to traverse the level to get to the end of the level. So I don't think any of these are missable. But the different types of powers, there's really only 2 types I've found. Ones that are going to require ammo that you find in the world, like these little orange balls that'll sort of fuel the different powers that you have of that type. And then the other type are going to be ones that like have a certain number of charges that will recharge with your movement. And so you'll see at the bottom left, the science type, which is the one that you have to recharge with your movement, it'll tell you how many moves you need in order to recharge to be able to do those types of moves. And again, these are pretty much necessary for traversal and defeating sort of advanced enemies and progressing, so I don't think any of these are missable. I'm not going to spoil any of these, but some of these are going to be AoE attacks, ranged attacks, so I really like the combination of these and how you can get more charges to make it easier on you as you're getting to more advanced levels. And speaking of more advanced levels, let's talk about the pacing in this game. So I like that you're getting new abilities and you're finding use cases for them, and I feel like they're very evenly spaced throughout this game. It's not overwhelming. You're not going to have like 10 different powers. Like, there are maybe a couple powers that you're going to be managing as you move throughout, but I like the spacing of how frequently you get them. And like I said, there are 3 different areas. The first area, you're really just focusing on moving and attacking and finding that ebb and flow, and then maybe getting a simple power and incorporating it into how to kill a specific enemy. Once you get into the second area, it really starts to lay down like, okay, now you're going to really get into some strategizing and maybe even a little bit of puzzling with the timing of the hazards and the enemy things. And so I like that it's really starting to increase difficulty linearly of the enemies, of the hazards, and managing the synergy between them. Exploration is not as open-ended as you might think. It's just like if you see an extra path, you can go down it. Maybe it dead ends very quickly. I do like exploring and finding some of these secret areas, but again, it is optional. I do suggest trying to find heart pieces because it's going to make the game a little less difficult for you. And speaking of difficulty, in terms of accessibility, I like the training that you get, combining the real-time and the turn-based. Again, like I said, the first area, I feel like it's really trying to train you with some of the basics, and then it starts to challenge you in the second area. I did die a bit in the second area. Again, I'm almost finished that second area, but when you die, you just return to the start of that individual level, so you don't have to like go out to the zone menu and go through all the levels. You just start at the beginning of it, which is nice. Again, I like the optional exploration and collection and the upgrades. I like improving the character. I think it's important for the challenge as it gets more crazy. And I like sort of this arcade challenge aspect and the leaderboards. I think a lot of people will min-max this or get really into just trying to get the best at this level, especially if you play games like Resogun that have that arcade grading feel. A lot of replayability in the levels because you might have missed something or you might try to beat your minimum time or something like that. And then I think with saving, I think you might have to complete a full zone in order to have it save, so like exit the game. So once you're back on the zone menu within the area, I think that's fine to just kind of leave and come back. But I'm playing it on the Vita, so if I'm in the middle of a level or something like that, I just kind of put the sleep button on. You probably do the same with the Switch, because again, I think this game is really great on sort of like a mobile console. Let's talk about the vibe of Nova 111, and let's start with some visuals. So there's definitely like a lighter palette going on here, almost like a pastel, but it's mainly like grays and some beige. There's definitely some colors mixed in depending on the different area that you're in, but the flare in color is really going to be in your character as well as your meters and your upgrades, like your health things. Health points are going to be like a bright red, like your power meter is going to be orange or green or something like that. So that's really where the flare stands out in terms of color. These are 2D models, but they have depth in their features, like the different enemies or like the different environmental hazards or things like that. They're going to have ridges or the horns on the enemies or the different elements of them. And a lot of tech and electricity. Obviously, this is futuristic. You're in a spaceship and you're going to be in environments that are a bit futuristic. There's something about some of the models, whether it's the enemies or the different characters, almost like a Powerpuff or like Dexter's Lab feel to it, but less thick on like the black outlines. Like some of the enemies will have big noses and no eyes. Really interesting combinations here visually. The indicators are going to be a big thing here, especially with different tells of environmental hazards or enemy attacks. Like it's very important to know when certain enemies are going to attack so you can get out of the way. They might like charge up or like look like they're getting mad or something like that. But a lot of times you're going to see, like, especially with the basic enemies, like this red or orange coloration where it's like, oh, they're heating up, they're about to hit or they're about to explode or something like that. And so it's really important to recognize those indicators. And again, after the first few levels, you'll start to get used to, okay, this is how I know they're going to attack next. And environments are similar. Like we talked about the falling rock icicles or whatever. When something is loose, like it is obvious, like you see it kind of jostle back and forth before it's going to fall. So again, getting used to that, I think the visuals are pretty good there. And the fact that you're on a grid, you'd think like maybe it feels a little intrusive or like you're looking at graph paper or something like that, but you're really just seeing these squares, and it is nice visually. It's soft. It's not over the top like this is a grid, but it is obvious like, okay, there's a square there. There's a square there. That's a wall. I can't move forward. And the general shape of the level or the area of play is always unique. Like you're going to have long corridors. You're going to have split paths. But then the open areas, you're going to have hazards placed very specifically. And so I like the uniqueness of each level. It's not like you're going through the same model each time. I don't know if this is procedurally generated. I don't think so. I've replayed levels a couple times and it is the same. So I think it is very intentional how everything is displayed. And lastly, with environments, finding secret areas, it does take a keen eye. You will start to recognize like, oh, when you see like sort of this faint overlay of the foreground, it's a good tell that there's something behind there or there's a secret there, but it is constantly switching up how it shows you a secret area. So you'll get well-versed, but then it'll be a little more difficult to spot as you kind of progress forward. In terms of setting and themes, you're in the future, I think. You're in space travel. There's a lot of tech, and it's very self-aware of the futuristic or techno babble. Like some of the characters are going to be like, oh, that's science, or science is working, or, you know, it's very kind of tongue-in-cheek about it. A lot of your environment and your hazards are either going to be like space junk or asteroid rocks that you're breaking up or shooting lasers or robots moving. And a lot of the enemies are going to be like these strange alien monsters. Some of them will have tentacles. Some of them will be jelly-based. So I don't know if it's like space meets aliens meets like underwater things or something like that. The different characters you're going to come across are primarily going to be a lot of scientists. Like you're going to be saving scientists. There's like a main guy who I guess is driving the ship. and he keeps like commenting, like a dialogue bubble will come up at the top whenever you go into a new area or whenever you rescue somebody or something like that. And sort of the content in his dialogue box are going to give you context or like Eureka discovery. And that sort of plays into like the silliness or the lightheartedness of this game. I really like the nonchalant humor. Like, it's very surface level. It doesn't take itself too seriously. Anytime you rescue somebody or you do something, like the main guy has like a nice quip or something silly to say, but as well as being helpful, like he is kind of giving you context or like, oh, you can't kill that enemy or that's a new enemy. It does sort of help you whenever you encounter something new. And I think there's kind of like a dystopia. I don't know what is the current status of humanity, but it seems like this might be the last of humanity, or like they're trying to go to a new planet or something like that, and you're just flying by the seat of your pants. You're just picking up scientists that are sitting on the side of the road. There's not really context to the state of the universe or what's going on with Earth, but I don't really care, and I don't think the game really cares, and that's nice because it doesn't have you overthink. And in terms of audio, sound effects in this game is very, very helpful, especially with the timing of the real-time hazards. Like, if you go under a falling rock, like, and you forget that it's going to fall, like, it will make a noise, or if a laser beam is about to go or an enemy is about to attack. So those sound effects are very helpful if you're forgetting, because, again, you're managing turn-based stuff and real-time stuff. So if you forget, like, oh, that's going to move in real-time, I don't have time, like, you will hear sound effects that are going to help you recognize, like, oh, it's coming now, I need to move. You'll also hear if there's a survivor nearby, like, you'll see them with a dialogue bubble saying help, but I think you also hear them say something. When your powers are charging up, like, you do hear them beam up a little bit, and that is satisfying. And again, there's a lot of tech and futuristic sort of things moving or doors closing, like, you hear that sound effect, and it is very satisfying. And then the music, I find the music very nice in this game, sort of like this relaxing ambiance that's very futuristic. It is kind of like space elevator music meets like soft EDM at times. Like, I do like some of the beats. It's very ominous, but also, again, very relaxing and sort of like easy listening. I hear a lot of Headlander meets Cocoon meets like Golf Club Nostalgia vibes in here. And so I feel sort of emptiness at times, but ominous in terms of like the path ahead or the journey through space that seems so empty and looming, but it's almost like we're going this way and this is the path that we have to take, and we don't know what's going to come out on the other side of it. And you really do feel that with the music. All right, let's wrap up the conversation about Nova 111. I really like this game. It's a game that appears very simple. Like, if you're looking at it on the store, it's like, oh, you're just kind of moving around, exploring, and maybe there's a little challenge, and visuals are a little silly, and the characters are a little silly, and the areas that you're moving through are a little limited. But there's a surprising amount of complexity here and unique synergy. Again, that turn-based and that real-time gameplay coming together and going back and forth with it in your mind about how to approach something or how to react to something, it really does keep you on your toes. This is a game that you could barrel through, you could force your way through the levels, or you could take your time and indulge in the strategy aspect. So you can really experience this game how you want, as well as the different levels of like arcade challenge. Like, the replayability there, I think, is something that's really valuable, and people are going to find value in that. Like with games like Resogun, like just diving in and like trying to beat your best score or trying to do it in the least amount of moves, I think that challenge aspect is really going to get a lot of people into this game. In terms of value, I think $10 is uniquely perfect for this game. The $10 price point is interesting because I find that a lot of games that are priced at $10 are games that the devs kind of know aren't that great, but they're trying to just maximize their money anyway. Like, I see a lot of low quality games at this price point. That's often a deterrent for me at times when I'm looking through the store. Like, oh, that game is priced at $10. It looks like it really is not something interesting. I see that commonality. but it's very interesting with this game because I feel like it accurately reflects sort of the simple approach that it has or the simple scope that it has when you're looking at it. But underneath it has such depth and complexity. I think that 15 might have been too much for this game, especially with other games that we've seen at 15. But I feel like $10 is the perfect price, and I wouldn't even worry about it being on sale. I think $10 is well worth your money with this game. If you happen to see it on sale, it's a steal. Doesn't matter how much the sale is, whether it's 10% or 50%, or in my case, 90% off, because I bought this for $1, which is insane value. Especially, I'm playing it on the Vita. I think this game is amazing on a handheld console. I am always looking for games that I've crossed by on Vita. This is one of those games that is just perfect to hold and play in bed, play a couple levels. I love playing this before I go to sleep. I think it would be just as equally good on the Switch. May even be a little better because the screen is a little bigger. But this is a game that I'm going to continuously pick up and play. I'm just going to have it on my nightstand anytime I want to play. And I think this is a really good game for really any kind of gamer. So I highly, highly recommend this game. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Stay tuned for our next episode to see what new game we found for you.